When we come to practice meditation, like doing anything else, we look for the right way to do it, or is this going to work? We realize there's some kind of aim we have in mind, however, enlightenment or peacefulness or relaxation or clarity, you know, often, however technical you want to be, it's often a particular quality of feeling that you look for, ease, release, felt experience, you know? And where's that? Where would that be experienced? Where is the mind? Where's that experience? What's the basis of your experience? If you know where to look or what to, where to bring your attention, then naturally you're going to be looking in the right place. Now, often when we meditation, we often naturally assume this is about the mind. And yeah, that's true. But of course, what the mind is somewhat. We can assume certain things. We think the mind is a thinker. No. It can do that, or that's one of the experiences that can happen to it. If we widen that term to mean psyche, the emotions, yeah, that's there too. But a feature that I'd like to emphasize, because it isn't necessarily coming to our normal understanding of mind as citta, mind as embodied, an embodied sense. This is where you're going to find the experience of release, relaxing, safety, ease, comfort, yeah. Freedom from the nagging, the tension, the passions, these violent experiences that can overwhelm us. And this is where we begin in meditation, is mindfulness of body. Yeah. And we're looking for something systematic. And actually the Buddha doesn't give us a system. He doesn't say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But he recommends systematic attention. Not so much a system as being systematic. And the systematic process is check your attitudes, come into presence, put aside what's unskillful, whatever you can put aside that's unskillful or even unnecessary right now. Irrelevant. Just a distraction. Speculation about the future, the past, your identity, what people think of you. It's just wasteful. Don't be wasteful of this precious possibility. And then put aside that and focus on what's for your welfare. And for this, he says, mindfulness of body bears great fruit. And of all forms of mindfulness of body, mindfulness of breathing is held to be of great fruit, great benefit. But it begins like that. You know? Of course, you know, where does anything begin? It begins with your interest, it begins with your understanding of where you go wrong, your accidents, your trapped, your breaches of virtue, you think, oh, this isn't good, integrity. It begins way back. But we come to the meditative part of it. It begins really with mindfulness of body. And this is where we begin to get a fuller sense, and we need to, in fact, often shift our understanding of mind to an embodied sense. What I mean is, often we consider mindfulness of body, think, oh, well, I'll bring my attention onto my body. Yeah. And what actually do you focus on then? Bring your attention onto your body. Maybe sensations. Something distinct you can experience. There's a particular significance in mindfulness of body, why the Buddha uses that, in my opinion, is because the mind, body is not just a matter of sensation. Sensations give us a representation of the body. And often we have an internal representation of our body, a sense of having arms and legs, of being male or female, or tall or stout. And this can be quite difficult. Representation of our body could be something we feel uncomfortable about, or we're comparing ourselves with others, and or we're worrying about the appearance, our aging, or state of our clothes, or something like that. You want to get rid of that representation or put it aside and come directly into the body, not just as we think it or even observe it, but how it itself is sensitive and intelligent. So instead of being mindful of the body, using the body to be mindful, that is, bringing full awareness into as a bodily experience. What is the full awareness of your bodily experience? Sensations, yeah. Anything else? Heat and cool, yeah. Tired, stiff, flexible, relaxed, tense. Sense of me, I'm here. And to look at it more systematically, I'll present certain layers of what the body, way a body experiences, the way the body does experience. It makes, and why it's so beneficial, and much more beneficial than the thinking mind. First of all, when you experience a tactile sensation, such as the pressure of your foot on the ground when you walk, or you're picking something up with your hands, if you notice, you just notice how that happens, is the body is aware of a particular contact impression, such as touching the floor, touching a cup. And it's also aware of a broader sense of the body. For example, you couldn't walk if you could only feel sensation. Yeah. Because you just feel the sensation of your foot on the ground, then what are you going to do? So now the body, when it understands this is about motion, it brings to mind, it brings into the background the entirety of the body, and then certain energies move from the feet to the hips to the back, to the whole body starts to move. In other words, it can relate a particular specific sensation to the overall sense of the body, of itself. Yeah. It has this particular quality. Pick up a cup with your hand and you want to get it to your mouth. How you can do that? If you just feel sensation in your hand, okay, now what are you going to do? The body senses, okay, this is about going to the mouth, so it's aware of the whole body and begins to focus on the hand and the mouth together, coming together. To a certain point, all energy goes into lips become very large in your awareness, and you drink. And that happens without thinking about it. In the mind, the thinking mind doesn't play any part in that, apart from just to say, I want to drink the water. So you can eat and drink while you're watching television, doing something else, without sticking a fork in your eye. Because you don't have to think of the body, in a way it means the body is actually very attuned and intelligent, and it doesn't get it wrong. It operates. It can operate independently of our thought. This is why, of course, it can be tricky, because your thinking mind can easily just leave your body altogether and separate and go into its own realm. So the understanding is that to really explore the experience of embodiment, this is one way. The local sensation always will refer to the broader field of the body. And to sense that, your mind has to relax a little bit. Your attention has to be quite supple, not too rigid, not too heightened and intense on a point, but actually sensing the point within a larger sphere. And this is what is meant by vitakka vichara. So if we noted these two words, vitakka, to bring something to mind, to bring something to attention, such as the sensation of my hand on the cup. Vichara, to explore, to receive. How is that? Yeah. It means something can also receive the sensations, and that receptivity can increase and deepen to even the weight, how my arm picks up the cup, the movement in my arm, yeah, the gradations, the changing, the awareness of how the cloth touches my arm, what happens in your chest. So it can be very receptive to a wide field of experiences. Notice that when the Buddha uses the words vitakka vichara, bringing to mind and receiving, sensing, they're not one after the other, they're conjoined. That means you can do both at the same time. In fact, though your mind doesn't think of it, or feel something and then think about it, touch something and think about it. No, your body can do both at the same time. That is, in your body you can both touch a specific point and also receive the overall impressions of that. The body has that depth to it. The body awareness has that depth to it. Thinking mind gets confused. Should I do this or that? Thinking mind can only do one thing at a time. So it gets very confused by meditation. Meditation is terrible for the thinking mind. It's just very confusing. And so we really find the right system to get it exactly right, your thinking mind. And it ends up, if you follow that track, you end up basically suppressing your body. Your bodily intelligence has to be repressed or shut by your thinking mind. And you do it, get rather wooden and robotic, which you can do. But relaxing you can't do. Doesn't know how to relax. Thinking mind does not know how to relax. That's not its job. Its job is not relaxing. Its job is holding, finding, conceiving, planning, making something work. So you can't get that sense of ease. Thinking mind, it doesn't know how to do it. It doesn't know how to let go. That's not its job. Yeah. I mean, it's great because, you know, you can. Thinking is good for thinking, but it's useless for meditating. Or it's a very limited value for that. The value is just to be able to name something, bring it to mind, and then receiving, sensing, and perhaps even noticing, making a note of what's happening as you receive things. Okay, so like this, like that. Just to keep the two, thinking mind and the body, together, so the thinking mind doesn't drift off. So yeah, you can use it just to track what's going on quietly in the background, right, just making note. And realize you want to keep that quiet so it doesn't become too loud. So this ability to sense the overall experience of the body is a feature of the body that thinking mind doesn't have. There are other qualities that the body experiences. One is the sense of, it knows how to balance. You stand up, does it immediately, knows how to balance. How? It's able to, sense both sensations and also, we might say, internal sensations, pressures, and the overall sense of the body being in harmony and in balance, where there's as little stress as possible. And balance is the quality of minimal stress, where you just have all your, energy is in one place where it needs to be, and the rest of your body is just quiet. If you see someone walking a tightrope, it's not that every muscle in the body is tight and activated, but they're all, everything in the body is listening to the one point, which is the balancing sense of what it takes. So it knows how to do that. Thinking mind doesn't know how to do that. You couldn't figure out how, which particular parts of your body to have to, and if, particularly if you lose balance, you know, the body knows, okay, relax there, open there. It does it immediately to find balance. Thinking mind can't do that. Try and figure it out. You try and figure out how to walk. You couldn't. Which muscles to move, which tendons, how to, you know. You couldn't do it. Body does it because it knows the whole thing. It knows balance. It knows coherence. How everything can work together. So the entirety can work as a unity. When you walk, certain parts of your body relax and certain parts energize, and then it's a shift. It knows, it organizes itself around motion and around the space, even the space around it. So another level of body, it's aware, extends its awareness to the immediate environment, the immediate space around. So when you come into a room, you generally find, why do you sit there? You know, why do you, you know, it's not a question to ask, just notice how you find a place where you sit. Why? Because you feel comfortable. Why is that? The floor is exactly the same everywhere. It's exactly the same. But you find a place where you feel space is comfortable around me. You know? And at times you might want to sit closer to other people, you feel a bit more included, other times you feel a little more on my own, a little more room, you know, and that would change. So that sense, it's able to sense that. Yeah. And notice you can walk through an opening and your body knows you that fits your body. It's aware of space. And so it also extends sensitivity around. Now, it's not that we're particularly looking for any sensation, just noticing this quality of awareness and intelligence that the body has. Because as you more fully dwell into that, this is not just a kind of a casual process. It's extremely sensitive. You know, the sense of touch alone is as acute as your eyes. More acute, you know, fingertips as fine degree of detail as your eyes, and yet by and large in modern life all that's gone. This is why it has to be brought back and encouraged, because we are strongly in danger of losing huge amount of our embodiment. Yeah. Because basically a lot of the time we're in cars or trains, a lot of the time we don't use our legs, we don't experience motion as something we're responsible for. Motion happens to us, we sit down and motion happens. Switch the thing on and motion happens, things fly past. There's no, body doesn't operate in terms of its motion. Or you run, we rush through things. We don't feel our way through from one place to another. We have an idea in our mind, the kitchen, the door, the car, and we just rush towards that idea. You don't feel, your body doesn't feel it moving through that space. We go into our ideas and we start planning what we're going to do when we get there, or maybe, you know, who we're going to see, or what the time is. We go into our heads. We don't really feel the body organizing motion. So we lose that sense. Our body loses its flexibility, its mobility. It loses its sense of being in its own space. Because we're dwelling in the spatial world of our brains, of our thoughts. And the world of our thoughts has very little space. It's tomorrow and got to do and the problem and the urgency and the memory and the doubt and the choosing and the comparisons and the speculation. That's the world of our thoughts, isn't it? So where's that? And how much time do you spend in that? Just moving stuff around in that? You know? So, because of this, and most of that is suffering. Most of that is not either not happy with where I am, so I'm thinking about somewhere else, feeling nervous, feeling anxious, feeling desire, I want to be there. Most of it's suffering. And we dwell in it. And we even think, while we're in it, how to get out of it. How think of a way to get out of suffering. If I had one of these, I wouldn't suffer. We think, but that world is suffering. You can't create an object in that world of thought that isn't suffering, because that's the nature of the world of thought. It is. It's speculation and doubt. And there's one little point where we feel that moment of certainty. You know something is right. Oh. And then the mind fixates on that and loses flexibility. So even when we feel certainty as an intellectual thing, also is suffering. Because when you're intellectually certain of something, you get fixated upon that, everything else is wrong, this is right, and now you've got to prove it and hold it there, keep it in mind. That means you have to exclude, you lose flexibility, you lose tolerance, you lose openness, this is where human beings get extremely unpleasant, dogmatic, and ideological, and fanatical. Certainty, intellectual certainty, is generally a source of stupidity, emotional stupidity, and disembodiment. You know why so much of the teaching is about uncertainty, intellectual uncertainty, just to release that, withdraw attention from that and say, well, what you can know right now is, and what do you mean by know? What you can feel, deepen into, feel stabilized, feel held by, restful in, without any particular holding of opinion, being here. And that's another deep level of what the body senses, perhaps deepest level. Wherever you are, you're always here. When I say the word here, what does that mean for you? It probably means something like a moment when you, it doesn't mean just Dhammapala, it means, oh, present with, and I'm here with this thought in my head or this sensation in my legs, but going to the here-ness of it. And this also is the aspect of mindfulness of the body. The Buddha says it's just awareness to the extent to know there is the body. So it doesn't sound very difficult or detailed, does it? It is, in a way it's extremely simple, and in a way it's subtle, because most of the time we overlook it. Most of the time here is not obvious, because we're not doing it. We can't think it, we can't believe it, It doesn't do anything for us. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't make anything particular happen. It's not stimulating. It's not interesting. It's not... So what's the point with that? So we go up into our heads where we can suffer. Which is much more interesting. It doesn't seem like suffering, does it? Seems like, you know, until you, after an hour of it, you think, oh, where did that go? But this sense, this fundamental sense, which can, another way of putting it, is a background sense. Think of it like that. An overall sense. Not a specific point, but an overall sense. Say, background sense. Well, so doesn't seem very important. At all. Even if you recognise it. But actually, this background sense is the place of release. Because when you attune to that, all the details and the excitement and the struggles start to relax into that. The surging energies, stimulations, the details of our life start to relax, fade into that. And it doesn't mean we're running away. It doesn't mean we're negative. It just means that's the fact of it. The conditions of our life are much less than this unconditioned. If it wasn't that way, there would be no liberation. The fact is the unconditioned, the non-detail, the non-specific, is much bigger than all the details that you can ever think of. It's the place where all of those can dissolve and there's still room. Now, you know, in practical terms, in terms of our own karma, if you like, our own conditioning, our own personal stuff, our own life, then we need to keep that in mind as like, that's the background, and you want to place everything carefully onto that background. It'll be bigger than that, don't worry. You're not going to lose it. This is where, because it's through knowing the skill of that you don't place your ill will, your struggle, onto your judgments. You don't place who you are onto your idea of what you should be. That cannot do it for you. They will struggle. If you place the idea of what you feel you are onto the idea of what you feel you should be, they will not release. They will just fight with each other. Yeah. If you place your anxiety onto your idea of relaxing, it will not do it. Your idea of relaxing will get frustrated with your anxiety. Say, come on, relax. Relax, will you? Relax. Why don't I ever relax properly? They will just fight. Because it's not the right thing. The right thing is simpler, quieter, and it involves a certain degree of faith and trust and just receiving completely into your embodiment at that very deep level, that fundamental level, and sustaining it. Because that which you give attention to will grow. This is the nature of awareness, of mind. Mind is awareness. That whichever you give attention to, that will become a predominant feature in your experience. You give attention to the silence, background, the overall sense, that becomes the dominant feature, and the detail of your life sits on that. And you just bring them together and don't lose the background. Don't lose that. Don't try to push it. Don't try to fix it. Don't even try to understand why you have fear or jealousy or what you can do tomorrow. Yeah, they've got very strong temptations to them. Temptation is called tanha, craving, thirst. I get something that's annoying me. I really want to find out what that's about and how to stop it. The Buddha said this is rather like somebody shoots you with an arrow and you want to find out why they shot you. What kind of, you know, where they were coming from. So this may be relevant, but the most important thing is to get the arrow out. Then you can sort out the other details. If you don't get the arrow out, why they shot you and who, what kind of person they were, and it's secondary. Most important thing is get the arrow out. And even that very idea of getting something out, you use mindfulness of body, it drops out. You don't have to add struggle to it. This helps to understand why there's quite often a bit of a debate goes on between, is mindfulness, do we allow things into our minds or do we resist unskillful thoughts? If you have unskillful thoughts, if you feel ignoble, unworthy, unpleasant, do you tolerate them? Do you just accept them? Or do you resist them? And both of those views are relevant, in my opinion. Certainly, if you have those kinds of thoughts in your mind, you resist acting upon them. You resist the kind of scenarios that they concoct, the stories they concoct. You resist following those. You say, oh. To that extent, one does not tolerate an unskillful thought or an emotion taking over. You resist it taking over. To what extent do you allow it? You acknowledge this is present. This is present for me. This is definitely an experience that's happening. And you receive it in your body. You feel the tension, the excitement, the tightening up in your throat, the heat in your body. You receive that. And you go back to the whole body, and you allow the whole body, background sense, the overall awareness to let those impressions, that energy rest on it, and you keep extending from your activated places in your body, your passions, your tightness, your defensiveness, and you keep receiving the background, and the background will drain those energies from your system, from your nerves, your mind. They begin to just, they go from being very colourful to being sketchy to eventually disappearing. To this extent, just the power of total acceptance in the bodily sense and knowing what can totally accept, which is this unconditioned quality of embodiment, you use that. And so in this way, we begin to see a way in which you don't have to constantly be busy in your life or in your meditation. You find something that can begin to receive let the qualities, unskillful qualities, drain. And from that, skillful qualities begin to form. It's happiness. Happiness is a skillful quality in this sense. The happiness of contentment. Happiness of blamelessness. Happiness of fearlessness. Happiness of not having to have an opinion. Happiness of non-attachment. Skillful quality. Profound quality. Quality that's perhaps rare in the world. Even when we use the word happiness, people think of excitement. Excitement's not about happy. It wants more. It needs more. Happiness of non-attachment, much deeper, doesn't need much. Happiness is skillful. Happiness, this kind of happiness is for your welfare. This kind of happiness is a good sign that one's process of release is ripening. It's like a response saying, good, enjoy this. Enjoy this happiness. Because it begins to remove the traces of the fear, the aggressiveness, the craving in your mind. They begin to, you don't need them. You don't need to defend, you're fearless. You don't need to crave because you have enough, you're contented. You don't need to figure things out because you don't need that. Things never get figured out. You don't have to constantly know everything to prove that you're okay. Yeah. So this is the happiness of non-attachment. And if we cultivate that, and you begin to notice what takes you there, the references, the patience, the reminders, to certainly sense what you're feeling, not just your thought, but where your thoughts come from, the emotional basis, to acknowledge that, and to find that amazing property, a body that can receive, release, and relax our suffering. This is why mindfulness of body is stressed. The Buddha says, if you don't cultivate this, you don't find the deathless. That's pretty straightforward. So I offer this for your reflection this evening. Andamayam Dhammakataya Sarvadhamma Dhammasihi